Beware, spoiler phobes, you've stumbled upon A Storm of Spoilers, a podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones in conjunction with George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series. Now that we're beyond the books, the podcast has added a true spoiler section that can expand to include any Game of Thrones relevant books, shows, internet extras, special features, teases, trailers, interviews, rumors, production spoilers, guesses, theories, and crackpotitude. And if that's not your blood magic of choice, feel free to jump off after the first segment.
The realm. Do you know what the realm is? It's the thousand blades of Hagen's enemies. A story we agree to tell each other over and over till we forget that it's a lie. And what do we have left once we abandon the lie?
Chaos. A gaping pit waiting to swallow us all.
Chaos is a lack.
Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers. My name is Dave Gonzalez and I have not read any of the books in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire.
I'm Joanna Robinson and I've read every book in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire.
And I'm Neil Miller and I've read all the books in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire, but I gotta be honest, it feels like a long time since I've read any of them.
I feel like it's been a long time since there's been new motion on those. Like, I think maybe last November or something, we had chapter reports and then just a whole bunch of avalanche of bullshit. You know what we could do? Let's see if George left us any messages about the Winds of Winter right now.
I'm working on it.
Oh, hey, guess what? Still working on it.
I'm
working on it.
My confession is that I don't read a whole lot of books, so I need George to come out with one so that my English skills stay sharp.
Mm. He's failing all of us.
Another way to keep them sharp is by podcasting, my friend, my good friend,
yeah,
Neil Miller.
Yes. Speaking
of that podcast we do, yes, like this, like we're doing now, you could also type words at us about the words we speak. It's called Leaving Reviews. You leave them on iTunes. Helps us out. Helps other people hear about the show. And then we read some select ones back to you, like Joanna will right now.
I'm just going to read one. Basically, we're getting a lot of back and forth. There's a war going on in our iTunes review section of whether or not people love our new format or hate our new format. So I'm not going to
read. You know what, though? It's kind of like the battle in this episode, because it's like the people who don't like the format fire a few arrows, and then the people who do and want to defend it just show up with dragon fire and scorch it for like 10 straight reviews. It's fantastic to watch. I'm just saying.
It's a lot. It's a lot going on. But this review comes from an iTunes reviewer who goes by the name of, we know her name is Joanna Robinson. That feels like something you would leave on a Cast of Kings review, but
yeah.
Okay.
I was like, did they get their Daves confused?
No, this is definitely a Storm Spoilers review. So 5 stars, ruined forever, a lot like Mira. Okay. I'm a smug book reader, so much so that my husband read the books just so he wouldn't have to listen to me be so smug all the time. I've loved this podcast from the moment I found it. They're smart, prepared, and happy to be proven wrong. They're also willing to be actual critics of the show, wanting it to be the best it can be for the entertainment of all of us. I used to listen to a variety of different Game of Thrones podcasts on my long commute, but eventually every other podcast just sounds the same. The first 2 minutes are just ravings about how the most recent episode was simply and obviously the best one ever, and then unsound theories of why things are happening the way they do. Thank you to you three for not only being huge nerdy fans of the show and books, but also for being reasonable humans with eyes. I'm happy to be ruined forever for other Game of Thrones podcasts, as long as you all keep coming out with great content each week. Thank you so much to this reviewer. And I want to say just really quickly, I mean, we might talk about it a little bit more later, but I have never been more delighted to hear from our listeners than I was on Sunday night when you guys flipped your lid over the Chaos is a Ladder line and finding, like, getting so many messages from female listeners, Holler, who had to, you know, a woman explain to their husbands and boyfriends what this Game of Thrones thing meant, because they were Storm of Spoilers listeners, and their significant others weren't. There were some dudes who said that too, but it was a lot of ladies who were like, I listened to Storm of Spoilers, and I knew what was up, and my husband or boyfriend did not. So, you know, not to be heteronormative, there might have been some same-sex things in there too. Anyway, thank you guys all for listening. That was a really, really fun moment in our, like, listenership community this Sunday night.
Yeah, it was.
It was. Yeah, we can't go right after that review and talk about how great this episode was for, like, 2 minutes, right?
I know. I was like, this is a great review to read on this episode.
The one that had so many things we were asking for just weeks ago. Neil, you've been also engaging with the people for your segment called Send a Raven. What do we have this week?
Well, actually, I want to make one comment about that review Joanna just read, because I thought it was great. Mostly because I love people that do, like, mundane things that you should be doing for petty reasons, like the husband reading the book. Just so that his wife wasn't the only smug book reader. That's a fantastic reason, and I love it.
Yeah, I hope he was like, I mean, I actually hope he enjoyed the books, but also I'm enjoying the vision of him, like, bitterly turning every page and be like, one up me, will you?
Listen, so. The petty wars, I'm for it. Okay, so we had a couple of things going on. We got some emails, some tweets. And we had a poll, which went up really late because someone on Twitter reminded me that I didn't do it. So, kept it simple this week. Our poll was, who are you most afraid for during the Battle of the Loot Train, or the Loot Train Battle, or whatever stupid name it is? Because we'll talk about this later, but that name is stupid. Anyway, so the options were Daenerys, Jaime, Bronn, and Drogon. So if you guys, and you don't have to pick out of those four because you're on the pod and that's, you get special status, but who were you worried for, any characters, and who was it? So, I'm curious to hear, Joanna, what you think.
Well, the question is, like, was I actually concerned, or, like, which death would most upset me?
I think, like, we could go with the latter for you guys, because we actually knew none of those people were going to die.
We knew no one was going to die, but I'd be most upset about Jaime Lannister. Oh, my problematic fave. I would be most upset about Jaime. Sorry.
So I'm going to answer this in a different way, because in a world where in a world where we knew that the main characters would be okay, I was wondering why we spent so much time with Dickon Tarly. And then when he saved, Jaime from the Dothraki Blood Rider or whatever, I was like, man, are we getting like a one episode highlight of Dickon having to die heroically to, you know, save Jaime or do something much? It turns out leaks were still accurate, but that was one of those things where, as it was happening, I'm like, oh, maybe we didn't get the whole story on this Dickon bit.
Oh no, the Dickon bit continues. mine, honestly, we talked about this last week, where I've forgotten a lot of the leaks now because I don't know why. I was genuinely worried for Bronn. I was like, oh shit, they're gonna kill Bronn here. Not remembering that I'm pretty sure I was supposed to know that Bronn makes it, but...
Oh, my sweet summer child.
Yeah, I was legit worried for Bronn. The people, the 3,000-plus people that voted in our poll, voted pretty overwhelming. Well, not overwhelmingly. 38% for Drogon. Everybody was worried about Drogon. And as we'll talk about here in a couple of emails, there are people who are still worried for Drogon. And then 30% was Bronn, because I guess he does feel like the most likely, like, speaking line character to get killed if you're going to have to kill somebody big in a battle.
It feels like time in, you know, we're in the second to last season. It feels like time for Bronn to die. You know, like, Lady Olenna's dying. It feels right that Bronn would die. Yeah.
Right. But I don't know. Maybe Bronn will make it.
Or Jaime or Daenerys.
Yeah. Jaime got 22. Daenerys got 10. Obviously, the people that follow us on Twitter are not as worried as Tyrion. So, moving on, we got a couple of fun emails this week. The first one actually was a tweet that we got from our good friend Lindsay Romaine, who we hung out with at Con of Thrones and is awesome and is the keeper of... Did she write that for Thrillist, her list of the best Game of Thrones podcasts? I think it's for
Thrillist. I believe so. She definitely does Game of Thrones stuff with me at Thrillist, Lindsay Romaine.
Yeah. She had a really good... She keeps it very updated as she finds more great podcasts. We are obviously already on the list.
Obviously.
Well, I mean, because we hung out with the author of the list.
Yeah.
Anyway, she pointed out that there is a really interesting Reddit thread about Lady Stoneheart truthers, which I thought I'd bring up because we haven't talked about Lady Stoneheart in a while, and it's a passion of mine. So there are people. I don't think they're right, but if they are, awesome. As Arya is saying, "Didn't you vow to serve both of my mother's daughters?" There's a woman in the background who walks by who has like brownish hair and is in a, like a, almost looks like a robe. It's pretty clear that it's a maid, like a handmaid of Winterfell. But it's a woman in a long green dress with long auburn wavy hair and her head down. So people extrapolated that to maybe that's the ghost of Winterfell. That's the, that's Catelyn Stark hiding out, keeping an eye on her daughters, which would be amazing if they were like, if somehow that turned out to be how like Littlefinger dies or some shit. But I don't think that's true. I don't think it's happening.
Someone also was like, "That's." I mean, this is like that time that people thought they saw the shadow of Serio Farrell in Braavos last season. Someone also today on Twitter was like, "What if Arya puts on Catelyn's face and she's wearing Catelyn's face when she murders Littlefinger?" And I'm like, "Do you know how disgustingly decayed that face is now?" Like,
it's several years later.
Stoneheart dead, not happening. Sorry.
Yeah. It's tough. It's real tough. Well, I mean, her face would be fine if she were resurrected like she was supposed to be. Anyway, next thing we got. So just it's great to know that the Stoneheart truthers exist. Email from Dean, who said, "I just watched Spoils of War and I'm feeling awestruck. I was wondering if Qyburn might have poisoned the scorpion bolts and if that would be enough to kill a dragon in what I suppose would be a delayed effect." This is actually a question that I've gotten, not just via email, but from people in real life who are like, "Do you think Drogon is going to die now because that had poison on the tip?" So before I go in with these people, maybe Joanna can talk me out of it.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. You know, Qyburn used poison just last week. So, like, my knee-jerk was like, Qyburn's not a poisoner. But, I mean, he is. Though a lot of people thought Euron was going to die because he got nicked by some sand snakes, but he got nicked by the right sand snakes. He didn't get cut by Tyene, who is the only one in the show who likes to poison things. If Tyene had built that scorpion, that ballista, I would say for sure Drogon's a goner. But since no Martells were involved in it, I'm a little skeptical. But, you know, who knows, man?
I'm going to guess not because of the Academy of Television Storytelling. I don't think they would have doused the multiple bolts that Bronn had access to all in poison without showing us at least some hint that the ballista and the poison existed in the same thought space.
I agree that they would have shown us something before, just like next week Drogon's like, poison. That's how Drogon talks. But
that's how Drogon sounds and like it's poisoned.
Bronn probably had gloves on the whole time. I haven't rewatched it in the last 2 hours, but you probably had gloves on the whole time. But you know, he was also just like handling those bolts without any sort of precision or care as he slotted them in. So, like, I feel like if they were dripping with poison, he would have been more, like, tentative with the bolts themselves. So.
Yeah.
But that is a really good idea if someone puts two and two together for future dragon combat.
Yeah, that was my first thought was, oh, no, that's not a thing. I don't think that's a thing. And then my second thought was, wait, why isn't that a thing? Like, that's exactly what they should do. They should poison the tips of those because they know they're not going to be able to hit a dragon multiple times with those things. anyway.
Right. And then I like that they took this episode also to show that normal arrows have no effect anymore on Drogon. So it's right. Like we're upping the rules of what could pierce his hide at this point and what, you know, hurts or a dragon, which seems to be getting harder as they get larger.
Yes. In order to actually pierce the skin of a dragon, you need a very large arrow or spear fired from a very strong projectile. That's all I know about that. Okay, next email. This one came from Brian Bird, who, this is a long email, so I'm not going to read the whole thing. Sorry, Brian.
Good, though.
You want me to read the whole thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Brian says, can't believe I'm writing this email, but I just finished last week's episode, and I'm stuck in an airport, so here it goes. Hey, I know that feeling. I think you're all being a little harsh on Littlefinger. The show hasn't made him stupid. He still fingers. But the dude has fewer fingers with which to finger. Hear me out. When Sansa's Raven arrived, Littlefinger had two strategic choices. One, ignore it. Let Ramsay wipe out the Starks, leaving an emboldened, sadistic, unpredictable Bolton-led North, an emboldened, sadistic, unpredictable King's Landing, and who knows what in Daenerys. Poor odds if you're angling to eventually find your way into power. Option two, agree to help. Take Ramsay off the board. Create a unified Northern Alliance led by the rightful heirs to Winterfell, with which you can legitimately challenge Cersei. Or you hang back, let Dany wipe Cersei off the map, and figure out your next move later. It was never really a choice, especially when you consider his affections for Sansa, which may be the only genuine thing about the guy. So he rolls up to the Vale, dunks on Ramsay, then lays back in the cut to see how the Jon-Sansa dynamic resolves itself. All reasonable actions. Then Jon leaves, leaving the impressionable and manipulable, at least as far as Littlefinger thinks, Sansa in charge of the entire North. At this point, the fingers are fully extended and conducting with preternatural efficiency. Yeah, that's right. That sounds about right.
Yep.
It only goes sideways when the prodigal Starks return. Despite his speech about considering all outcomes at all times, even Littlefinger's imagination couldn't allow for Arya turning back up in Winterfell as a super assassin or Bran returning as an all-seeing tree kid. Brandon Bark, in my opinion. You can't game plan for any more than Jaime... Jaime and Bronn could prepare the Lannister army to face down a dragon. Point is, Littlefinger's got a bum hand. Not like Jaime. he's holding a 2, a 7, and 2 Uno cards, and they're all smeared with shit. After years of his best-laid plans coming to fruition, Littlefinger finally caught a bad beat. It was long overdue. He's not dumb. He's boxed in by circumstance. Giving the dagger to Bran as a way to ingratiate himself to the true heir to Winterfell only looks stupid after he realizes the emo robot can see through space-time. It's a move born from desperation, not stupidity. Same for what happens later, which I'm not going to read.
Yada, yada, yada.
Because it's storm stuff. Brian listens all the way through. Sansa got sharp. Arya fell out of a raid movie. Bran is the Westerosi Professor X. Then there's a part in here about the Golden State Warriors that I'm just not going to read. Sorry. I trust this irrefutable rebuttal has convinced you all to end your slanderous character assassination once and for all, and I eagerly await your passionate mea culpas in a future episode, or not, whatever, it's just a TV show. So thank you, Brian, for the email, and, keeping me on my toes there. I agree with Brian's assessment of Littlefinger. Like, he's run out of room basically to operate. Like
I think this deserves a full discussion of the episode at hand, which means I'm going to move us directly into the calm. Do not pass go. Do not collect any gold from Highgarden.
If you're listening to this delightful ad right now and you know something you're wearing is sort of pinching or rubbing you the wrong way or whatever, let me just assure you, Mack Weldon's better than whatever you're wearing right now.
Hey, Dave, did you get any of the silver underwear?
Oh, you mean the ones that are antimicrobial, which means they eliminate odor? Not this time, but let me tell you, that might be the cure to these hot Colorado afternoons, is some antimicrobial undergarments.
Silver ones are very comfortable. I would almost go as far as to call them the Valyrian steel of underwear, but they're not, like, hard.
Let me tell you something. If you have only had one shirt for several years and it's just filthy with grayscale, you could go to macweldon.com and I get 20% off by using the promo code STORM right now. Get some underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and then go back to that dragon queen. I'm sure she'll take you back the third time. It's the charm. And we're back to talk about the character assassination of Littlefinger, because I get Brian's point. I'm just saying that stuff like the dagger, it's another example of Littlefinger giving Sansa away to Ramsay in the first place. It's there should have been a slight more feeling out of the current position, a little bit more looking before the leaping, considering this is somebody who plotted the major deaths of the first four seasons of the series. I get what he's talking about, that he's playing the best hand that he has, but I don't think he's playing it well, because I think the show needs to have him front and center because he's a good actor and he's a main character. But what Littlefinger in this actual situation would do would hang back and see who came to the top of the Stark pile before he started just playing games with everybody.
Right. And I feel like he would have that. You're right that just slight probing into who Bran has become, like not just assume that he can play Bran the same way he played Robin, which is by plying him with gifts over in the Vale. Right. And just really find out who he is before approaching him, you know, and I guess he's kind of doing that with Arya, but I agree that you're right, because Littlefinger, in plotting the downfall, the death of Joffrey, like, he had to wait for Olenna to make a bunch of different moves in King's Landing before he asked to become her ally, basically. You know what I mean? Like, he, you know, and Lysa, he was working a very long con on. So, like, yeah, he's a waiter, he's a planner, he's a thinker. Ever since the show has gotten off the books, Littlefinger, I think, has been one of the characters. Like that whole scene where he goes down to King's Landing and he talked to Cersei, and I have no idea what he was talking about. I still don't. I think this is, you know, we talk about how the show survives off the books. There are so many ways in which it's doing a great, you're doing real great, sweetie. This is a great episode, but Littlefinger feels like he's been a casualty of efficiency and other things. So
it really felt like a, you know, sand in the face, because they used the dagger in a stupid moment. So it's like one of Littlefinger's greatest planning moments, which is getting Catelyn to arrest Tyrion at the end of the crossroads and kicking that all off, is like smashed right up against a moment where he thinks he could outsmart a magic kid and doesn't even like ask anybody else if Bran's magic, which you feel like somebody would tell him, right? Because Bran's just like not acting normally.
It's like him not asking if Ramsay was a sadistic bastard. Do a little bit of background before
you know what I think it is, though.
Yeah,
I think it's the show, the loss of, I mean, this is probably me giving the show a little too much credit, but if we ask ourselves, like, what is the show saying by Littlefinger basically falling into the pit of chaos, is that at some point we have to give in to the magic, and at some point the magic is going to win, and it's going to sort of dominate the end game of this show. Littlefinger is a very practical, pragmatic force in Westeros. But it's to me, it's like he really did play his best hands, and he can't compete with the magic stuff, which I think is kind of the same with Varys. Like, they've done that same thing where it's like every time we see Varys kind of either get tripped up or get freaked out, it's magic related. And these two like political operators just are not prepared for it.
I mean, that at least makes sense in the overall arc of the series. It just, it's weird as somebody who's actively watching the show to see a character that I have such high esteem for making mistakes that seem like mistakes when, like, the scene starts and he's, like, pulling out a dagger and handing it to Bran. I'm like, that's it? You just start the scene and he just hands him the dagger? So, there's ways in my mind it could be more artfully delivered, but I think sadly that would mean just less Littlefinger on the show, which I'm pretty sure they're not willing to do because they are building to something. I just kind of wish it didn't need to make him stupid I guess the other character that was worrying me from this episode and that sort of thing was Bronn's first scene, which I think is the first scene of the whole episode, if I remember correctly, where he's gets his gold and then immediately asks Jamie about the castle. It seems like the second time I watched it, that's more for us, the audience, to remember all the promises Jamie's made and to see that Bronn isn't necessarily on the side of Cersei like Jamie is. But it sort of also comes in a way that makes Bronn feel kind of petty in a way that he hasn't before. Like, he always seems sort of just like game for it, especially when he was winning, which is definitely what the Lannisters have been doing. Is there like some huge turn? Is Bronn just now a prop in the plot mechanics of this show?
I know it sounds like we're doing a lot of nitpicking, guys, and I promise we all really loved this episode, by the way. But we just decided to kick off with this character assassination section. But, before we get to like the actual awesome assassin that is Arya Stark. But anyway,
don't worry, I'm here to defend all these characters.
Well, with Bronn, I don't know if like what they were trying to show was like by him losing his bag of gold, like it's the freaking chalice in Last Crusade, and he's like, can't get it. Like, does that then give him motivation to save Jaime? Because the big question is, like, why does Bronn save Jaime at the end of this episode when, like, he has been so upfront throughout all of this that he is nothing but a mercenary sellsword? And is the motivation to save Jaime, like, well, Bronn lost his bag of gold, and all he had was promises from Jaime Lannister, and so if Jaime Lannister dies, he doesn't get the castles like he was promised, because like that was a verbal agreement, so he doesn't have a contract. You know what I mean? So does that give Bronn the motivation to jump off a horse into dragon fire and save Jaime, because that's his best hope for a promising future? I don't know.
I mean, honestly, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, I think under the surface, because I think Bronn's a, you know, a good person in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Under the surface, I think Bronn probably did it for multiple reasons, including the fact that he probably kind of likes Jamie at this point. But I guarantee you they'll make a joke about that where it'll be like, you're the one who owes me money. Like, that's why I saved you. So, because if they're going to address it at all, it's going to be Bronn being snide about it.
I think Bronn is like kind of a good person. I agree with you. But I think he would happily save Jamie any day of the week if it didn't put him at any risk. The question mark for me is himself, like throwing himself into the line of Dragonfire.
Yeah.
That to me seems like a step beyond what we would expect from Bronn. So, but you know, if they manage, you know, next week as they come dripping out of the river lake pond that they fell into, if they come out and Bronn's like,
the
well,
river lake pond abyss,
Bronn's like, well, you owe me that castle now or whatever, like something like that, I expect is what we'll get next week. If indeed Jaime Lannister is not dead. Do we want to talk about the dagger itself?
We should.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Dave Gonzalez wrote a great article over on Thrillist.com. That's the second plug this week for Thrillist.com. I hope Matt Patches is listening. about this dagger that we saw, you know, earlier in the series. We also saw it earlier this season when Sam was flipping through the book in Old Town. One thing that intrigued me, before we get into Dave's great article, which I'm really excited to talk about, one thing that intrigued me reading, it's interesting to read Entertainment Weekly's coverage because the author, James Hibbard, often knows more than he can say, but he'll occasionally, like, you know, because HBO fills James in a lot of stuff. He gets to do set visits, etc., so he knows a lot of stuff, but he's only going to tell you what, you know, he's allowed to at any given time. But he has a lengthy thing about the dagger in this week's recap, and he does say something about, like, we'll learn more about the dagger later on. Basically, like, there's more to the story of this dagger. We all knew that, but this feels like a more concrete confirmation, to me anyway, that there's more to learn about this dagger. Dave, do you want to tell us who this dagger might be connected to?
Oh, so I was looking back at the Dragonstone when we see it in the book that Sam's reading, and he's reading about dragonglass, but the dagger is not made of dragonglass. So I looked at the second paragraph of that book he was reading, and it's about how after Aegon the Conqueror forged the Seven Kingdoms, this is how they would decorate their blades with dragonglass, and then the knife is actually an example of that. So we know that the the dagger is a Valyrian steel dagger, and it has this weird ornamentation that we haven't seen, this like bony ribby hilt thing that's super ostentatious. So what if it is a Targaryen ancestral weapon? Because all the Valyrian steel we've seen thus far in the show has been very tied to a family, or at least it's notable when it passes between one family or another. So I would say Dragonglass, Targaryen's decoration. Maybe it's Rhaegar's dagger.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like the way it's designed, dragon bone hilt, like it feels definitely like a Targaryen blade. Connecting it to Rhaegar, who liked to put rubies on his breastplate, I think is a brilliant move on your part. And the idea that I think you said in your headline, like, and why it might be Jon's. And so, like, if Jon is Rhaegar's son, then, like, the dagger maybe technically belongs to him or something like that. I don't think we're going to see a future in which Jon takes that from Arya. I feel like that is Arya's weapon now. Another
Unless Arya doesn't make it trying to kill
the Night King.
The Night King, and Jon has to pull it out of her chest, flaming, and kill the Night King with it.
Maybe. Well, so another great theory from, I don't know if this person's a listener or they just read the stuff that I read or whatever, but they go by @motelsonmars on Twitter. It's the first time I've ever seen this theory, but this person theorized that Arya's dagger has been reforged from the Valyrian steel sword's Dark Sister. Dark Sister was...
She talks about it at Harrenhal,
yeah,
right?
She talks about it in season two when she's talking to Tywin, and she's talking about sort of the Targaryens, and she's like, oh, Visenya Targaryen had a Valyrian steel sword named Dark Sister. And I had never looked at the image of Dark Sister that's on like the wiki, but the hilt is a black sort of spiral hilt with a ruby on it. I don't know who did that art, but that's how it's described as well in the book. And so, like, at Motels on Mars, theory is that the cat's paw dagger has been reforged from Dragon Sister, or from Dark Sister, and that, you know, there's a couple, like, fun little connections to it, like the fact that Arya is the Dark Sister of the Stark clan, and then also the fact that the last time Dark Sister was seen, it was wielded by Brendan Rivers, who was the Three-Eyed Raven, you know, and Bran was the Three-Eyed Raven, and he had the dagger for 2 seconds. So, I don't know. It was a fun theory I've never seen before. I really, really liked it. But the red oval ruby and the black spiral hilt, I think it'd be really fun if that were the case. But
even if it's not Dark Sister, it could have been, like, in that family. You know, it could have been, like, you know, a dagger that Aegon had made, you know, or brought with him when he conquered. Right. So it's just kind of cool that it's clearly an old Targaryen relic.
Well, what's great is that as soon as I read Dave's article, I had this vision of like, actually cannot talk about, I'll talk about this in the storm. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I was going to, in a not stormy part, do you think we're ever going to get an official name for this dagger?
Yeah, I definitely do.
Nice.
So somebody's either going to give it a name, or we're going to discover the history of it to the point where we're going to, it's no longer going to be the cat's paw dagger. It's going to be Dark Sister. Or
yeah, maybe Arya will just name it Dark Sister.
Yeah,
that's cool.
She should.
Ooh, that is cool. I like that. That's what
would
happen.
I would like to point out, though, there were a lot of people that talked to me about the dagger, and they were confused as to how Littlefinger got it back. Because the last time we saw it before it pops back up, in this
scene.
It's on Ned's desk. But I actually think that that's an easy one to explain. I mean, basically, like, Ned was beheaded, and then who was in the hand of the king's office to stop Littlefinger from just going in and looting the place? I mean, that sounds like a very Littlefinger thing to go in there and look for information. So you're probably like, oh, that's mine.
It's not just on his desk because, you know, Dave in his article has that shot that you've seen around with like the dagger on the genealogy book that Ned was looking at. But there's also like a later scene where Littlefinger he's like touching it. He's like the dagger's on Ned's desk and Littlefinger's just like playing with it. He's rotating it around. So like he knew the dagger was on Ned's desk. And so, yeah, I referred to him as Sticky Finger. I believe that Littlefinger would break into Ned's office and just lift that dagger because he wanted it. So yeah, that would be, I would guess, the chain of command on the dagger. Can we move from daggers to dragons?
Can we ever move from daggers to dragons? Did you guys like the dragons in this episode?
I loved the dragons in this
episode. It had the most polygons.
It did have a lot of polygons. It
was, I mean, honestly, you know, I feel like this was the sentiment in the room when I was watching, when the episode ended, was, oh my God, those looked real, which is great. It's the most real they've looked. Like, Drogon looked fantastic in these sequences.
The thing that they nailed that so often bothers me in polygon situations is weight, and especially in that deadfall, I feel like they really, like, got it. I think they really got it. And then if you watch the behind-the-scenes feature, I'll just say that last season, during the Battle of Meereen, I think it was, the Battle of Dragon's Bay, they had 11 shots of Daenerys on the dragons, and that was the most they had ever done. In this week's episode, they had 80 shots. So a lot of dragon. I thought, you know, I tend to be really snobby about this shit, like, without any education to back it up. I just, like, knee-jerk snobby, and I loved it. So, Dave, tell us.
No, that's good. I mean, I don't think they've quite got Daenerys on the back of Drogon yet. Luckily, the direction by Always Sunny Matt Shackman really just knew how to nail this particular action sequence. The majority of the shots place Drogon above the horizon line, which means he doesn't ever have to interact with anything that is actually real. Or then there's that one really great shot that's straight down. But even then, you could just do them completely on different levels. So the key to making Drogon look as awesome as he does right now is just keeping him separate from all the physical parts of the scene, which luckily there isn't a lot. There's a lot of, you know, digital doubling. But then the actually using dragon fire to cover up where Drogon meets the horizon is, like, some of the greatest things that I can't believe they didn't do in the arena, in that scene where she's flying out of the arena. Like, just have her fly behind some people on fire, and you would have saved yourself all that masking that we're always harping on. So really just smartly shot. That, you know, that they spent so much money on the Drogon model this year, because there's that shot in the trailer that we're going to get next week of close-up Drogon teeth. And so they had to get it down to that level of detail, and that's the size of the dragon that's flying around now. So we could do things like zoom in on his face as he starts, you know, puffing smoke and fire out of, like, the back of his throat, and get to check in all those details. Where before it was just like Daenerys playing with a floating, I don't know, tennis ball. The fact that the dragons are now so massive and compared to a human, it's just easier to keep them out of interacting with humans entirely. So you can still sort of see where the effects team is still constantly developing, but still learning on how to do, like, Danny gripping Drogon. So they do a lot of stuff with, like, cloud effects and whatnot to make those less noticeable, or give her really important lines like Dakaris, so you're not even paying attention to what her hands are gripping onto and if the mask lines are moving. And just letting Drogon be this independent thing flying around in the air that can dip in and out of clouds and can smoke. Be just as much an auditory presence. Yes,
the smoke
and the smoke
gave a lot of cover. Like, when I was watching the behind the scene feature and watching them digitally layer the smoke over Drogon, I'm like, yeah, that covers a multitude of sins, and it's not inorganic, because he torched a bunch of shit, so of course the whole place is super smoky. Like, that makes a ton of sense. Strafing the supply line and, like,
is great.
The kind of explosives that they use to make it look like this was explosion reaction to dragon fire versus, like, I don't know, just something blowing up on the ground, you know?
Yeah, there's a real force behind the fire, which is something that took you know, both the digital aspect of, like, showing Drogon, like, you know, basically just reel back and blast him, but also the special effects, like that is sort of amazing that they pulled that off. You know, the physical explosions looking like they were being pounded from above.
And then also watching Drogon skim the water, I thought looked really, really good too. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
My thought was like, take that, Harry Potter.
No.
You thought you did that shot cool.
I was thinking of that shot in Force Awakens. There's like a similar shot in Force Awakens, right? With the tie, with the, nope.
X-rays. Yeah.
With
the,
yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So Drogon, great. A lot of assholes, including me, were like, why didn't Dany just bring all her dragons, forget the Dothraki, and just torch everything? And the special effects people were probably like, three dragons? Fuck you!
You guys can't even tell them apart.
Anyway, the dragons look great. I love the Dragonstone setting, because I think the dragons look fucking great way out over the ocean in the background, just like dodging and wheeling. I think they look great. I think they look incredible in the foggy distance where we can't see them, but we just know that there are three dragons there. And then for Drogon to just have the spotlight of the big battle, it's fine. I'm fine with it. The Dothraki looked great too, so, you know.
I will say that it's pretty daring that they have waited until this point in dragon CGI to use the clouds to their advantage. Because if you think about it, there are like six other shots in other seasons that would have been improved if they had just put clouds in there. But they, you know, let us see the dragons, so I'm glad we're finally at the point where they're using all their tools of storytelling and visual deception to be full-on magicians and give us dragon battle, because I've been waiting for dragon battle, and I'm glad it didn't disappoint me.
The last thing I'll say before we merrily roll along into the storm is to concede that I think maybe Dave's right about what Davos is doing with Sandy, and I'm not happy about it. But I just want to, like, I like to admit when I'm wrong. And last week I was like, how dare you? Someone suggested the perfect word for Davos, which is the word avuncular, which literally means uncle-like. So avuncular Davos is how I wanted to think of him. But I think he teetered over.
He's creepy avuncular Davos.
You guys are saying that you think Davos is being creepy with Missandei?
Not creepy, just like, you know, familiar.
He's flirting with her.
Yeah. Which is fine. She's a beautiful lady.
No, can't do it.
All right.
Can't go with you on this one.
All right.
We'll see you next week, Neil.
I'm just saying I'm not sold yet on all this right. idea that he's like hitting on.
Well, so her. I was also a stubborn resistor, but this week I bend the knee to Dave. So we'll see you next week, Neil, if you want to be a kneeler with me. We'll see.
No, I'm a believer that Davos is not weird. He's just a straightforward guy.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's terribly weird to be flirtatious with a beautiful young woman. It would be less weird if Davos didn't have a wife that he never thinks or talks about, but, you know. The Isle of Noth, where they don't have marriage. This sounds great to me. Let's go. What are you talking about, Davos? All right.
No, wait for that wood-carved butterfly, and then we'll all just agree that he had little crush. Or then, you know, then Grey Worm can put a spear through the back of his head or something.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, she got a man. He don't got a dick, but she got a man.
I got a man. What's your man got to do with it? All right.
Do they wear underwear? They don't, do they?
I don't think so.
I don't think there's a lot of underwear in Westeros, which is...
If you had to climb all those stairs at Dragonstone, think of how much chafing there would be.
You would need some sort of antimicrobial premium fabric.
I ordered some sweats from Mack Weldon, and I really, really love them, and I am not a gentleman who wears boxer briefs. I am a lady who sometimes wears loungewear, and Mack Weldon stuff is amazing.
I definitely got some boxer briefs and some normal boxers just to play with how much space I had for my unsullied bits down there.
I don't think your bits are unsullied, my friend. I hope not.
Unsullied. How many double negatives do I need to do to tell you that there is some comfortable underwear on me right now?
You can go right now to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off using promo code STORM. That's promo code STORM.
That's my favorite promo code.
Yeah.
STORM.
Have some delightful underwear or other essentials.
Embrace the storm. Your nether regions will be comfortable.
I am the storm, brother. The first storm and the last. And you're in my way.
Yeah.
And that, of course, means that we are in the storm. Good old Euron, who didn't pop up unexpectedly this week. Thank the Lord.
Although a lot of people have tweeted at us saying that he's going to show up and rescue Jaime, which that's just funny.
That would be great. Just pulling into a pond in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
Comes silence. Oh, just shit. Like out.
Euron's here. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. Out from under the surf like a Pirates of the Caribbean ship. Euron Greyjoy. All right. So what's this Dickon thing? It's our first storm note.
Oh, Oh, you brought up in the calm.
That I was, yes.
About why you thought we kept getting Dickon stuff. And I think, I know it's because they're torching him next week and we want to feel bad about it. So they tried real hard to get us to remember who this person is before they torch him. So that
Is she going to torch both Charlies?
Yeah, she torches the Charlies. So, like, if she just torched Randall, we wouldn't care. But she's going to torch Dickon, which is going to make things a little complicated because Dickon got, like, an entire personality transplant this season and is quite nice. And so, like, we're going to be like, oh, Sam's brother.
That's why I was worried for him, because getting somebody like Dickon getting pathos in Game of Thrones means they're going to die. Yeah.
So he's going to die next
week. Like,
so
I
was
how,
like, oh, shit.
It's like how everybody assumed Bronn was marked for dead when he lost his he lost his coins and decided not to pick them up. They're like, oh, shit, he's doing something nice.
Uh-oh, character development.
He's going
to
die.
yeah, so the whole, like, and that, to my mind, that's the reason why they keep making that Rickon-Dickon joke is, so, like, they've made it, what, 3 times now? So we... definitely.
But isn't it weirder since they also have not mentioned Rickon?
Yeah, super weird. But anyway, so like they planted the Dickon seed in people's minds. So when he dies next week, people aren't gonna be like, who? They're gonna be like, oh, Dickon, we barely knew you. All right, so that's one thing I want to say. The other thing that I stopped myself from saying in the calm was when you wrote that thing about the dagger being Rhaegar's. I was like, well, we know at the end of the season in the finale, we're gonna see the marriage of Rhaegar Targaryen and Lyanna Stark.
Wait, we know that?
Yeah. In flashback, we're going to see them get married.
That's more stuff that I forgot.
So it would be really cool if we saw the dagger like on Rhaegar in that flashback. If like we're watching
that
it,
would
and we're
be
like,
cool.
Oh, shit, there's the dagger! So,
but you said that we'd get to know its name. Oh, so God. You think that they're going to like name it then too?
Not in the flashback. I think we're going to see it then. And then I feel like, you know, either Arya is going to, I think it's going to have a name before this is all said and done. Either Arya names it or we'll find out. And then what Masandi said, this is just me quickly fulfilling a promise to Cast of Kings listeners. Dave Chen asked me directly why I thought Masandi was blathering on about bastards. And I was like, no comment. And then a bunch of people were like, will you please answer that question in the Storm section of Storm Spoilers? Which is to say that the reason that Masande is like reiterating these questions to John is like, a bastard is very clearly someone who was born out of wedlock. But since we will find out that Lyanna and Rhaegar got married, then John is no longer a bastard. So just, I think, laying track for that is why Masande had to be like, what's a bastard? As if she doesn't know. As if Masande's not like one of the smartest people on the show, so you know. All right, sorry, those are the things I wanted to quickly get out of the way.
Yeah, no, I keep looking at Dagger on Rhaegar as like that's like a dance hall album that I really want to hear.
Sorry, I never heard the word Dickon. All right,
Dickon, air horn,
Dagger on Rhaegar, Dagger on Rhaegar. All right. Okay.
It's all great chanting lyrics.
So we
guys, guess what? More Iron Bank this week.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just that was all I needed to say.
No,
is
that's what I was gonna say.
More Iron Bank.
More Iron Bank.
There's Iron Bank. There was dragons right after I complained about not having enough magic in it. Arya sparred with Brienne, which we didn't even mention in the calm. Like we completely forgot that happened in the episode, but it was amazing. And your post about how it like visually echoes all the things she's learned made me watch it again, and it was still amazing. Ugh.
The Tycho Nestoris part. We know from spoilers. Neil doesn't know. Here, Neil, let me tell you that.
Yeah.
That Daenerys will be hiring the Golden Company. before the season's over.
Wait, Daenerys or Cersei?
Sorry, Cersei. Cersei will be hiring the Golden Company.
See, then you got me all twisted.
Oh, sorry. My bad. Cersei, I think, is sending Euron over to get the Golden Company, so she'll have some boots on the ground. So I guess the Golden Company will probably show up in season 8 to do whatever. I don't know. Everyone else is going to be up north, and Cersei's going to be like, I'm the queen if nobody else is down here. See all my Golden Company.
My question is, wasn't the Golden Company with Stannis? Or was that just part of the Golden Company?
No, I don't think he got the Golden Company. I think he got someone else, didn't he?
I'm going to look this up, but I'm curious because I'm like, what's left of the Golden Company?
I mean, I remember Davos pitching Stannis on the Golden Company, but I...
Well, he pitched the Golden Company and then he pitched the Iron Bank, and I think the Iron Bank just backed him, but I don't remember if they...
But backed him and then Davos gave the money... Salador Sen, and then they were gonna, I mean, they wound up with more men. Like, Davos needed men, so Neil is right that it would make sense that that would be the Golden Company, but it's probably someone else, to be honest with you. Right?
Otherwise they would have all died outside of Winterfell. Or, you know, ran away. But then, no, because then they would have broke a contract, and the Golden Company's
never
broken a contract. Never so,
have
yeah.
broken a contract.
Oh, never. In
did
the
I
books...
Did I say break-in? Let's pretend it didn't.
In the books, the Golden Company, is being sought by several people. That's being sought by Arian Martell, who's not on the show. Mm-hmm. And then, because they discover that the Golden Company has broken a contract with Myr, the city of Myr, and the Golden Company are going to Volantis.
All right.
No. Yep. That's it. That's it. they weren't with Stannis.
Right. So that is what's happening in King's
Landing. Oh, no, wait. Hold on, there's more.
Okay.
Sorry, there's a lot on the Golden Company that I wasn't expecting to get in the wiki.
Yeah, there's all the Bitter Steel stuff and all of
that. Yeah, and that, well, they end with they're with Jon and fake Aegon in Westeros.
Yeah,
they support the fake Targaryen.
Yeah, but that's in the that's in the books, and that's not happening in the show. Nothing with Aegon's happening in the show. But I'm curious who in... I'm more curious who in the show... shored up the Stannis ranks in the show, in the context of the show, because the books are not going to help us here. But I don't remember what happened there. Anyway, please do send us emails.
Bravosian pirates, maybe.
Sure. I love it. Because he got ships from Salador Sand and they sailed to White Harbor, right? Like that's happened. So maybe he just needed a fleet because his fleet done got burned in Blackwater Bay. So. All right, so let's start with Winterfell. And we got a preview of Bran destroying Littlefinger's shit when he was like, chaos is a ladder, but also I know other things and I will tell them to you later. So
everything, because Bran is what he is to this show now, everything he says could possibly be important.
Right.
So it's really noticeable when he says things like he gives the dagger to Arya so passively, like it'd be no use for a cripple. And I'm like, bitch, you know exactly what she's going to do with that dagger. You could see everything. Like, stop. God damn it. Stop pretending like you're still on a television show with people watching it and act like a character would. And just like, don't say anything or be three-eyed raveny. This whole, like, it's wasted on a crippled faint makes Bran look like, okay, the way this could be okay and why it's not in the character assassination section is because if he is capable of doing all these, like, time echo things and he's aware of it, then it's probably not a good idea for him to in any way interfere with the things. Or he already knows exactly when he has to interfere because he has seen it in some sort of way. Which makes him like this really dangerous but also completely hobbled character that he had a cool moment revealing himself as that to Littlefinger, but then immediately afterwards they had to hammer that down with the Bran Stark died in that tree, and oh yeah, Mira's entire job on this show was to carry Bran places scene. So I'm really... He could end up being like a really cool threat, but I'm really wary of him being nonsense. The same thing that I dislike in plots where people keep information willingly from each other for no other reason than they just can't know that yet or the show would be over. Bran's really towing that line for me.
I have a question. Are we sure Bran can see the future?
Yes.
Yeah, because he could. So he saw the wildfire explosion.
Okay, so I think the show messed up when they included that, or the show is playing fast and loose with the continuity of things, because I don't think it's clear, other than that one moment, that the Three-Eyed Raven can see the future like a green seer. He can see what's happening and what has happened.
He also saw Drogon flying over King's Landing. And Daenerys.
That could also be in the past.
No. Neil.
Dragons at King's Landing is not a new thing.
It's Drogon, though. It's Drogon.
Are we sure it's Drogon? It was a shadow.
Yes.
All I'm saying is that in the books, it feels like there's a better delineation.
I'll make an enormous bet with you that Bran can see the future.
$5?
Yes. A massive $5 bet.
Cool. Whoa, that is too rich.
You guys heard it here. $5 I will owe Joanna if Bran can see the future. I think maybe the show messed up or they don't think anyone will notice, which is also silly because they know how Game of Thrones fans are. So, of course, they're going to notice. I'm not entirely sure Bran can see the future because in the books it's different. Right, they make a clear delineation between having what the Three-Eyed Raven has, which is the ability to see through the trees, and having what Jojen has, which is the green sight, which is you could see very briefly into the future. I think Bran is able to see.
Isn't Bran also a green seer? And like,
I don't think so.
Didn't Bran see the Weirwood tree before they got there? And I really believe that Bran can see the future. He might not be able to he might have an even a harder time deciphering the future than he does the past, but I believe he can see the future. And I also believe that throwing up the what Three-Eyed Raven can do in the book is not really helpful for the show, because the show has already proven that Bran can see beyond what has been witnessed by the Weirwood trees. You know what I mean?
Chaos of
the Ladder didn't happen in front of a Weirwood tree.
That's true. That makes a good point. My question is, what's the end game for the Bran thing? Like, what is his real purpose? Which is actually we got a lot of emails about this. Why does Bran even matter at this point? And it feels like all the stuff that he matters for is seeing what happened in the past and what is currently happening. Like, he can see what the Night's King is doing and he can see who Jon's parents were. But is there a strategic thing where at some point in the next, 9 episodes where Bran seeing the future
into a dragon,
a huge thing. Well, warging is a whole different thing, but it's is there going to be a moment where Bran, his ability to see into the future is a big strategic thing? I don't know.
I'm going to guess, just from how other dramas play out, even if it does happen, it'll be just quiet, Bran realizes he has to do something and just ends up in the right place. Sort of force-like, if you will. I don't think they're going to be a situation where they all gather around Bran at a table and they're you really have to try to look into the future, Bran. Or at least I hope not. That's a lazy way of doing this end battle.
That's how they do it on the CW shows.
Exactly. They could do it that way, but it's, HBO Game of Thrones, so I hope it's a large motion where, there really has to be the danger of being that omnipotent, which I think they established well with what he did to Hodor. We just can't forget that in favor of mystical Yoda Bran. Otherwise, it's going to be a dramatic imbalance between my suspension of disbelief that he could see the future and just can't tell anybody versus the story just doesn't know what to do with the omnipresent character.
Yeah, because the other question is if the Three-Eyed Raven could have seen what was happening in the future, he wouldn't have been so kind of surprised when the Night King shows up in the door.
Well, but it's he did, because,
So he can see the future. He just knows that he can't say anything or something, which is also
right.
He and like the Max von Sydow version of the Three-Eyed Raven says that thing where he's like, you won't walk, but you'll fly, he says to Bran. And maybe he's just like, you know, I'm going to train you and you're going to do so. But like that felt prophetic to me. You
that
won't
just
walk,
felt like
but
you'll be able to control birds.
Right, but how does he know that? Because I don't think warging is the Three-Eyed Raven's skill. That's a Stark skill.
Well, yeah, but he would know that about Bran, maybe. I don't know, because the prophecies
anyway,
or whatever.
I think you're wrong, and I'm right.
The even more frustrating thing would be if it is true that he can see the future, but they never use it for anything useful other than to show the audience like little snippets of what might happen a season in advance. So that's even more frustrating for me. Like, I will happily give you $5 if that's the case, but I'll be pissed.
Yeah, but the only reason not to be pissed is they did show the consequence with Hodor. Like, Hodor exists the whole one time in time travel history that the future was able to affect the past, had this consequence on the emotional Bran, and it was maybe the time that he maybe killed both of them. So I think that if they do just keep it snippets, and as long as they don't, you know, overplay the hand that I believe right now that Bran knows that what he knows is dangerous. And for giving the series the benefit of the doubt, I'm going to say that's why he's being all weird and vague about things. I could see it tipping in the other direction really easily into the what Neil's saying could be really bad.
What we know is going to happen this season is that Sansa is going to go to Bran and ask him to like access his Littlefinger file and basically try to guide him into giving her all the information she needs to later sort of like j'accuse him and then Arya kills him, right? And so Sansa's role is going to be guiding Bran through this because Bran cannot, like, he can't put on Cerebro and figure it out for himself. Like, he needs help. And so that's kind of a thing, is like Bran knows everything. Bran can see everything, but Bran doesn't know how to, it's just like too much. And he doesn't know how
to
focus
it. Do we know how that's going
to
play out?
I mean, we don't. And that's what I'll be curious to see. Because like, I'm afraid we're going to get it in a cutaway, because they're trying to do a surprise, I think, in that scene where, like, you think Sansa's going to turn on Arya and side with Littlefinger, and she surprises him. So, like, I don't know if we're actually going to see her guiding Bran. But, like, we're going to find out that that's what happened. And so, like, I don't know. I'll be very curious to see how it all plays out. But, like, ever since Dave said the thing last week, and then every point you've made, Neil, except for being wrong about Bran seeing the future, has been great one, which is that this is this is like a cheat character to have in a show of like a potential exposition bomb anytime he decides he wants to detonate. And can also like, I mean, he's a spy. That's great. You know, what's interesting to me is like, we know on the next time on that Bran is going to like warg into the flock of birds, see the Night King marching on Eastwatch, and then probably, you know, then tell Sansa. Sansa sends a raven to Jon, but Sansa's raven to Jon is going to be like, hey, Bran's back. He could see the future. I promise you he can. And he says,
I feel like John's going to be like, yes, okay.
The Night King is coming. And then John is going to believe that so readily without ever putting his own eyeballs on Bran that he's going to hop, like, you know, take half the cast with him north of the wall based on what Bran said about that. You know what I mean? So, all that being said, like, that's a positive reflection of the Sansa-John dynamic. If Sansa's like, hey, trust me, but Bran saw a thing. So then John's going to be like, I trust Sansa. Bran saw a thing. Let's go.
Does this mean that we're going to get Jorah next week?
Yeah.
Reuniting with Dany?
Mm-hmm. And John gallantly offering to give Longclaw back to Jorah, and Jorah being like, no. Take my family sword. And my dragon queen.
Oh, that happens next week? I thought that happened in 2 weeks.
I think Longclaw's next week, but it might be 2 weeks. We also get Gendry. Don't we get Gendry next week?
Gendry next week with his hammer.
We get Gendry next week.
So I think they keep the Longclaw conversation for the
big
battle
north of the wall.
So
oh, okay. All right.
You know who has the Valyrian steel. You know why these people care about each other. Right. But yes, lots of reunions
here's
for sure.
Here's my favorite weird heavy foreshadowing that only matters to those of us who are spoiled in the Winterfell sequence, which is the giant raven cawing sound that happened behind like Littlefinger and everyone like on the balcony there. It was just cawing for days, like to the point where non-spoiled people were like, what's with all the cawing? They asked me and I was like, I can't tell you, but basically it's to be like, Littlefinger has an idea. He's gonna access some raven scrolls. So it's really funny. Is there anything
else? Don't want us to forget about those raven scrolls.
Yeah. Sansa, I don't know. That's all gonna play out. I wasn't bothered by her, whatever was happening with her when she was watching Arya. I can't clearly define what it was, but I wasn't bothered by it. And the fact that she and Arya
creating the suspicion, like a suspicion of like what happened to Arya,
right,
in Sansa's mind, because isn't she eventually going to like discover the faces?
Yeah, the bag of faces.
Bag of faces.
Absolutely. And whatever, I think I was complaining last week in the Storm section that we were only going to get like one good Sansa episode and then it was going to be back to like shitty Sansa. But I didn't think Sansa was shitty in this episode. Like, I think her being weirded out by Arya was completely justified and fine.
Because it's weird.
Well, they played it really well. Yeah. Like, they played both of the scenes where they were the present, only one of which were they in dialogue, I think, which is in the crypt. But they played them both right on that line where I was so happy that they were talking and had like getting along that I didn't even think about the stuff they didn't talk about until way after the episode was over.
Until like you were like,
I was like, oh, no one mentioned Rickon.
No one, not a single person cares about Rickon.
No one mentioned Rickon. You could have just said like, I'm magic. Like a lot of things, you could have just like filled a lot of other things in.
Oh right, John. Like, hey, died,
do you know this Brienne lady? Yeah, you got. We both know Brienne. No, isn't that crazy? Maybe she was telling the truth about her mother all along. Ha 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 ha. But no, instead it's, you know, right on the line where I enjoyed it and just never questioned anything outside of the scene.
Yeah, what matters the most is that it's an enjoyable moment and that it feels authentic from a performance standpoint, because otherwise, yeah, we could pick that apart and it would be, you know, get us some really bad iTunes reviews.
No, but yeah, I really liked
it. They have the first Stark on Stark hug that feels like a real
exactly,
hug.
Exactly, because they actually, they're characters who've actually had screen time together before this scene. There's the crypt scene, but there's also the scene outside, next to the Weirwood tree where they got to have a sisterly bonding moment of like, cool, so Bran's that way now.
So Bran's weird now.
So that happened. All right, we talked.
Well, but then it flips where she's like, and you know, Cersei's on her list, and then Sansa's like, "Am I the only not magical Stark?" And I was like, "Yes,
everyone's weird now." Great.
I think I actually interpreted it as when Sansa's like, "Who else is on your list?" She just wanted to make sure she wasn't on the list.
I like that
because Sansa knows what she was like.
I want to marry Joffrey to have a million of his babies. All right. Dragonstone.
Meant to have his babies. Yeah, Dragonstone. Let's go to Dragonstone.
All right. So
where we get lots of flirting, flirting with backstory.
God, I really don't feel like it's
John and Danny, too.
Danny and John are flirting.
Oh, Danny and John for sure.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I'm sticking up
that's
for
what I was
man
mainly
Davos,
talking
though.
About.
Yeah, I mean, okay, we'll see. cave paintings.
I was saying how I liked how it wasn't a meet cute last week, even though they could have played it, you know, slightly more romantic-y. They turned that knob up to where I was expecting it to be for all conversations this week. That's basically the chemistry I expect from John and Danny the rest of the season, which I think is okay because these actors still have it in their grasps. But as we've said before, not the best track record in terms of acting these things, these two people. So I'm really hoping that they stay in each other's orbit as things are going to get weirder around them. But anyway, about the cave paintings, do we believe John's interpretation of them, or do we believe that they are the children trying to explain everything about this war that's been going on? Like, men cut down trees, children make White Walkers, men and children have to fight White Walkers. Here's a big Dragonstone mine we left for you.
The earth.
Woman inherit Dragonstone.
No, I mean, I mean, we're only ever going to get John's interpretation, and it's just, there's not going to be like a secret other interpretation. I think that's it.
We have like 6 movie length episodes next season. You don't think they're going to try to complicate the?
It would be nice if they did.
The Night's King.
I agree. It would be nice if they did. But you know, given I wrote a post today about George R. Martin's original outline, which I revisited. And let me find the part where he talks about the White Walkers, or which he calls the Others, because he hadn't seen Lost yet.
It was pre-Lost. Yeah.
And he does not describe them in any kind of like nuanced, let's see, let me do a word search for Others. The greatest danger of all, however, comes from the north. The icy wastes beyond the wall, where the half-forgotten demons out of legend, the inhuman Others, raise cold legions of the undead and the neverborn and prepare to ride down the winds of winter to extinguish everything that we would call life. The only thing that stands between the Seven Kingdoms and an endless night is the wall. A handful of men in black call the Night's Watch. Their story will be at the heart of my third volume, The Winds of Winter. The final battle will also draw together characters and plot threads left in the first 2 books and resolve all in one huge climax. So the way that Martin describes them, and he's very frank in this letter. You know, this is a letter that surfaced in 2015, but was written in 1993. He wrote it to his publisher, HarperCollins. And he's very, like, frank about, like, the twists and turns. He's like, yeah, Ned Stark's going to die and all this other stuff's going to happen, blah, blah. And, like, I feel like he would have said something about, like, and these Others, blah, blah. But actually, there's a twist and they are actually good and all the humans are bad or something like that. Or they're time travelers from the future or they're actually apes or whatever. So I think we're just getting ice.
Well, I guess the reason it's on my mind is because The Dark Tower came out last week and is apparently horrible.
Sure did.
And I've been thinking a lot about endlessly turning wheels, especially because Game of Thrones made such a big deal last season about Daenerys saying she wanted to break the wheel. Aren't we just going to end up in another Long Night cycle? And if we do, why are we watching this cycle? I've got to think that there's some hitch of complication, even if it's just, you know, they don't just kill the Night King, they remove the dragon glass from his heart and then kill him or something. But I keep waiting for the reason for that Bran flashback to be more than that one scene we got with Leaf being kind of guilty. But maybe that's it. Who knows? Maybe I have high expectations. I wanted Cersei to die this season. Obviously not.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think your version is more interesting, I guess. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, Neil? Well, there's a lot. That was a lot to ask for, the shortest episode of Game of Thrones.
Neil, do you have any thoughts?
Nope.
I think it did. Okay, I think it was an interesting scene that showed, like, when Daenerys gets the bad news about Castle Rock and Highgarden, she's like, burn them all. And Tyrion's like, maybe not, though, my brother. And we don't even see Missandei react to the fact that Grey Worm is stranded. You know, that she then turns to Jon. And she's like, what should I do? And he sort of tempers her, you know, Mad Queen tendencies with this other plan, which is like, let's burn some crops instead of some castles. But, you know, I think that's laying really good groundwork for, you know, them really respecting each other. And, you know, she obviously has a crush on him. He has a crush on her. And, like, you know, she wants his advice and approval. And his advice and approval is not going to be terrible because he's John and he doesn't, like, have terrible ideas. He's just, you know, John. Anyway.
He's just an unwashed northerner.
So, you know, who doesn't know the difference between less and fewer. So that is Dragonstone, right? Oh, except for Theon.
Theon shows up and tells us what he's going to be doing for the rest of the season, and no one cares.
I cared. I thought Alfie Allen was great on that beach. Sorry, I did.
He has been doing great, but isn't the next time we're going to see him also on that beach? Couldn't we have saved that moment for later? But then that timeline would have been stretching. I would have nicked it for that. Yeah, no, it's fine. The Theon scene's fine, and he asks where Daenerys is.
Then we
she's not there. Showing that guy that was talking shit to Theon at the end of the last time we saw him. They keep showing that guy's face and how he's angry. That guy's getting his ass beat at some point.
I think Theon actually kills him in the finale to show that he is like full Ironborn again. Yeah. Theon definitely kills an Ironborn. Or, sorry. I believe, right, Dave, that Theon kills an Ironborn to prove his point? It's definitely going to be that one guy whose face we
know. I know there's a large showdown, but yes, if there is, if it does end in a killing, it'll be that guy, because we have not memorized any other Ironborn people. He's the Dickon Ironborn.
Dickon Ironborn. All right, Iron Dickon aside, now we go to the real Dickon and the Field of Fire part two.
Book readers, tell me why it's called Field of Fire.
Neil, do you want to, or I can? Either way.
Well, because there was an ancient battle.
Sure was.
Called Field of Fire.
Sure was. That took place.
I don't remember what happened.
Okay. So it took place in the almost the exact same location, which is in the northern part of the Reach. And it was the Lannister army and the gardens of Highgarden used to be, the House of Garden used to be in Highgarden.
Oh my God. They're one of the Hightower people.
Yeah, basically. When I read that, I was like, oh, I see. All right. So
it was simpler back then.
Yeah. It was the garden or the gardeners. The gardeners are the gardens of Highgarden. Okay. So they and so the king of Highgarden, King Lannister, joined forces against Aegon. And Aegon's like, yeah, you know what, though? I got three dragons and two sisters, and we're going to fuck your shit up. So all three dragons attack the Lannister and Highgarden forces, strafing the Field of Fire. So that's why it's called the Field of Fire. This is the only time ever in Aegon's conquest that all three dragons fought together. Visenya got an arrow to the shoulder, but she was fine. So I think that was a little echo in Drogon or something like that. And the Lannisters and the Highgarden forces lost. I think we talked about this when we talked about Casterly Rock, because like the Targaryens were actually really appreciative of this, because they were afraid they would never be able to take Casterly Rock even with their dragons. But on an open field, they beat the shit out of the Lannisters and got them to bend the knee. They killed the House Garden, whatever. And that's when they installed the Tyrells into Highgarden. So that's the genesis of House Tyrell at Highgarden, which.
So this is one of the examples.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
The Tyrells. Yeah. Oh, this is one. It sounds like one of the examples, like Cersei blowing up the Tower of the Hand, Tyrats bringing the Sept and kind of getting bigger.
Yeah.
This is a historical thing that they adapted in the show.
Yeah.
But yet decided to call the loot train battle for some reason.
I can't believe they're calling it that. It's the worst thing I've ever heard.
Somebody did point out that maybe they're saving Field of Fire for another battle later.
I don't think so.
A battle with three dragons on a field?
Well, we're never going to get three dragons on a field, are we?
I mean, we might. They just might not be on the same side anymore.
Yeah, that's it.
But maybe someone else is like, it would be an injustice to call it Field of Fire, because the original Field of Fire was so much more impressive, because there were like two kings and all the Westerlands and like blah blah. So anyway,
if they'd mentioned the Field of Fire before, I would have said that was a good reason, but this is a battle we haven't even heard
of. That's true. The most impressive thing about the original Field of Fire is that this was the swords from that were sent. All the swords from the losers were sent, and that's where the Iron Throne was begun constructed. So, like, the base of the Iron Throne is all the swords from all the people the 10,000 men who were burned by dragons in this battle.
Yeah, that's right. So, what did we see of the future in this scene? We see Neil was arguing with me, gently debating with me, earlier. That this might be a really important turning point for Jaime. It's not going to not be a turning point for Jaime, but it's not the turning point for Jaime.
Yeah, I feel like there's things that are building blocks toward Jaime turning away from his sister. And I think Bronn also has a good role to play in that, because it's like, when they get out of the water, Bronn's going to be like, dude, we are losing. Like, we're going to lose this thing because dragons. Like, I don't think Bronn's going to be like, yeah, let's go back and join up with your sister again and see how that all works out. Cause he's already a skeptic. So I feel like that, I don't know. Maybe it's just me wanting the show to do more with Jaime's turn. But it feels like, to me, it feels like just another huge block gunning toward the end of Jaime and Cersei.
I think the idea, I think you're making, you make a great point about Bronn, because it's next week that Bronn tries to broker a meeting between Tyrion and Jaime. And so, you know.
This, oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. So this being like a.
Crazy.
This being a turning point for Bronn, I accept more than it being a turning point for Jaime. Because, you know, Jaime's going to like double down for at least two more episodes until the finale.
Well, there's a way that he could doubt and then double down halfway through the episode if we get a certain drop of information, which I'm hoping is what they do. It is at least make him a little complicated, because you got to think that even Jaime Lannister has to be a little shaken by that. And if we do pick up immediately when Bronn's dragging him out of the river, he would be an idiot to say, like, no, I'm going to like double down on this thing. I think there's room to make Jaime a complex character.
Jaime has
still have him by episode's end.
Always.
Be on Cersei's
oh,
side.
Oh, like if it comes back and character. Cersei's like, I'm pregnant.
Boom. Right. Baby bomb.
Yeah. That keeps lots of couples together.
So, yeah. Is there anything else we learned about, like, a nod towards the future in the battle?
Qyburn.
Yeah.
Either made a lot of those things or is going to wish he made a lot of those things. Those scorpion basilicas.
Basilicas, yeah.
Baliska. They call a scorpion in the show. It's a scorpion. Yeah. Okay.
It's a dragonfeller, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
The dragonfeller. I don't think so. Oh, go ahead.
No, you're right. He didn't make any more.
Oh. Are you serious?
Well, at least not this season. Maybe he'll have more next season.
Oh, my God. That's the dumbest. It's that will, if that's it, let's just assume that that's it. That's the,
well,
that's
what
even
I was,
dumber than not tipping the arrows of poison. It's like, wait, what did you think you were going to do with one of those that's made of wood?
That's why I was so frustrated that they were holding back magic for as long as they do, because knowing what we know about the rest of the season, we have to pivot to Jon Snow's worries and concerns pretty quickly. And I don't think we're going to have a ton of more time to worry about the Battle of the Mad Queens. Not that there won't be movement on that, but I think we've seen our major jousting between the two queens for a little bit. They're going to try to reorient on a magical threat, and I guess the drama's going to come out how they do that, which, yeah, I don't need to talk about it all now. We got a couple more episodes to go. We got more Storm of Spoilers to come.
Yes, we do. I did want to say one thing, though I don't remember what it was, so forget it. But, maybe one of the reasons why I liked this battle so much is because there was no Jon Snow in it. And it's very rare for us to get a Jon Snow-less battle. You know, usually Jon's in every single battle and it's always snowing. So this is a southern battle.
You know
no
what,
snow,
though?
You know, no snow on the ground, no snow, Jon. No snow,
but Jon Snow's influence is there, and I think it's part of his character growth that he, you know, had the right counsel for Dany, and assuming that he came up with this plan to ambush the Lannisters outside of King's Landing, and then I would assume have the Dothraki start the siege of King's Landing. It shows that Jon Snow has learned from all of those battles in the snow.
That's not happening. What?
No,
what,
I was
not having
the siege of King's Landing. No,
I
would say
okay,
they just go home.
So they're just gonna go. They're like right outside of King's Landing. They've destroyed the supply line, and they're just gonna go home.
Yeah,
they're at Dragonstone. They've always been right outside King's Landing.
I have military problems with this.
Well, no, she's gonna torch Tarly or two first. Then she's going to go home, and they're going to be like, harumph, harumph, she's the Mad Queen. And then and they're going to be like, well, let's send Tyrion to sort of parlay with Jaime. And then that doesn't go very well. And then they get distracted by ice zombies for a while. We only have three more episodes left.
We, of course, have Eastwatch coming up, as we think, next week. Neil, you have, as per usual, made up a description. What do we have looking forward to?
So we're going to see Bran fly. Metaphorically, Daenerys will return to Dragonstone, where Jon Snow comes face to face with a dragon for the first time, and Gendry ? We think we're going to get Gendry, but I couldn't come up with a way for the show to hide that. So maybe Davos goes back to King's Landing, or Davos has a secret mission.
Returns to Flea Bottom.
Another
Davos returns
another
a gift.
Another prodigal son returns.
Yeah, so, you know, interesting episode. We should get a lot of fun. Oh, and some Tarleys get torched, I guess.
That'll be fun for everybody. Good old Roller hasn't had a nice dragon offering in at least by next Sunday, 7 days. So, guys, until then, we're all killing it online. Let's start with Joanna Robinson. Where could people find more of your excellent Game of Thrones work?
You can find my work of dubious quality on VanityFair.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at JoWroteThis.
Neil Miller, who surely he'll stand up for your own work.
You can find my work of even more dubious quality at FilmScoreRejects.com. And you can get me on Twitter at Rejects. Also, don't forget to follow the show at Storm of Spoilers. It's where we do polls and we tweet out all the articles that we write. Don't forget to send us emails. Emails, stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E, where I'll always pin my newest Game of Thrones piece for Thrillist.com. And you can find the rest of our podcast, stormofspoilers.com. Leave us reviews on iTunes. We'll see you next week if you manage to dive out of the dragon flame into the very conveniently placed lake right now.
Here I stand in a world that's not my own. Not my choice to be the last, but I'm not alone. Come with